Chema. So we are on chapter 6 of second series of Essays on the Gita. And in Essays on the Gita, it is titled as Works, Devotion and Knowledge. In the Gita, it corresponds to chapter 9. And the chapter 9 is titled as Raj Vidya Raj Guhya Yoga. It means we are face to face with a secret of secrets. And the mother refers to it as the great secret in her conversations in Agenda, where she says that, during the time of apocalypse, and she describes at great length, she says the great secret is that those who do not know about anything about the yoga or what was done, but they just have this faith in the divine sacrifice in matter, and they will be saved. So these are her words, very powerful words. And she mentions the Gita, and she says it has been mentioned in the Gita as the great secret. So we are face to face with a great secret, and the great secret is strangely so simple that one wonders why is it a secret. So it is so simple and yet so comprehensive, all comprehensive, complete in itself, and yet for the human mind it's so difficult to learn this one single simple thing, which is the mystery and the joy of surrendering oneself completely to the divine and being redeemed by the divine, regardless of who we are, regardless of what we are, regardless of where we are. This is the great secret. And the human mind gets lost in ifs and buts because it believes its smallness to be everything. There is a passage of the mother in volume 4, if I remember right, 51, where she says, some time back I said that you are hypnotized by your, each of you represents an impossibility, but now I say that each of you is a difficulty. And then she says, you have difficulties, you think it is impossible to get over them, you are hypnotized by your difficulties. And do you know why? So, nobody knows why. Maybe weak will, maybe this, that, all this. And she says, because you do not believe in grace. So that's how it says. Because there is grace. Actually, if there is no grace, there would be no hope, honestly. I often used to feel that, karmic theory, if left to man and his karma, world would have been doomed how many times, we don't know. Something saves, something pulls us out and carries us despite ourselves. This is the great secret. And by whatever path we go, because this chapter is all about, works, devotion and knowledge, by whatever path we go, at the end we are faced with only one thing, and that is surrender. So when we pursue the divine or the reality, as we may call it, through the path of jnana, knowledge, so what happens at the end of jnana, if we are sincerely pursuing it, we discover that great self, the true self, the one inhabiting all creatures. It's so tremendous, infinite, eternal, that this little self, this little puppet ego, has no other choice but to surrender itself. Can it resist that when it sees that vastness of infinity? No, I'm going to hold back. No, even if you go through jnana, you will end up surrendering. If you go by the path of works, you will end up at some point abdicating all your desires to the one sole will which is operating in this cosmos. Because one learns that this is the not only the safest but the most practical wisdom, to abdicate one's little personal will and with all its ramification of desire at the feet of God. It doesn't mean not using the will. but using it as an instrument of the divine will. And if we go by the path of bhakti, then the consummation is even more complete. Why? Because in bhakti, in jnana it is the mind with its striving for knowledge. In works it is the will striving to execute or work for the divine. But in bhakti it is the human personality which comes face to face at some point with that supreme divine personality. What does it do then? It just says, carry me along. That's how the mother describes a vision where there is a carriage going on, a carriage which is mounting up the hill, and the horses and the charioteer, they find it difficult, but it's going with difficulty. So there is a person sitting there and he says, let me push it. So she says, you please sit inside. It's beyond you to even try to push it. You sit inside. The charioteer and the carriage is already being taken uphill, whatever be the difficult task. So in bhakti, of course, in bhakti you start with surrender, you proceed with surrender, and you end up with surrender. It is understood that this surrender is not a tamasic, lazy surrender. It doesn't mean I'll do nothing, God will do everything. The problem with that is that divine has to first cure us of our laziness. Laziness and divinity don't go together. Divine is super active in the world. He is the only person who is morning to night, 24/7 and whatever, active since. So lazy person cannot imagine embodying divine nature. So we have to do what Sri Aurobindo says, some self-enabling sadhana. Some self-enabling. Grace uses that as a point of support and does the rest. But if we don't do that, if we just sit and say God will do everything, then he has to first cure us of our laziness, which means blows in life, which means challenges mount, which means difficulties come more and more, because we have just left it, you will do everything. He'll say, okay, but I have my way, you are not leaving any options with me. So he will give a wake up call, then shake up call, then break up call, all kinds of things. So this is the background, and as I said, this is a marvelous chapter. So Gita is a song, that's why it's called Gita. It's a Gita song. Song of the divine. Bhagavad Gita. So it is the song of the divine. And like a song, it rises, it sets the base, rises to a crescendo, a climax, and then it slowly, just like mother's music, it slowly sinks into the soul. First six chapters set the basic note. The next six chapters are climbing to a crescendo. We are on ninth chapter. It's right in the middle of climbing to the crescendo. The crescendo after this chapter, there is God in the power of becoming. Then the utter vision of God as the time spirit, world spirit. And then the way and the bhakta. So bhakti comes at the crescendo, the crown of everything. Sri Aurobindo uses the word crown. And then Kshetra, Kshetrajna, Yoga, etc. It's like gradually, you know, ultimately summing it up, tying up all the threads. The song is, you know, it's... So this is where the Gita takes us, a beautiful ride, holding the divine hands. And that's what Sri Krishna says in this chapter. When Arjun asks him that you are teaching me such a simple way, difficult to believe. What about those who with great tapasya, knowledge and ascesis climb? He says, they too come to me, but through a long, difficult road. I am telling you the easier, simpler way. That's what we see, you know, when Sri Aurobindo says, turn to the mother, open to the mother. People ask, but tell us a method. See, they are not happy. People ask, they ask questions. Is it really that simple? Turn to the mother, open to the mother. I said, see, you want more simple than what Sri Aurobindo has said. Try opening, see how difficult it can be. Try surrendering that. But that is the path which is still the swiftest. So the Gita says this is the swiftest path, the sunlit path, as Sri Aurobindo says. So with this background, we read a few passages. Page 329. They are simply marvelous. That's all I can say. To the soul that thus knows, adores, offers up all its workings in a great self-surrender of its being to the eternal. To the such a soul, not for anyone and everyone, but to such a, he starts from there. He'll take to anyone and everyone. God is all, and all is the Godhead. Now, what kind of relations we can form with God is the all means what? It sounds fantastic, but so bhakti is all about relating with the divine in as many ways as possible. So is he a teacher, guru? So much we hear in Upanishad about guru and sishya. Mother would say, no, I am a much more comfortable to be happy to be the universal mother. So mother is one relation. So what are the other relations? In synthesis, he takes it to what length? It knows God as the father of this world who nourishes and cherishes and watches over his children. So when people say, I don't have a dad or, you know, or parents, I said, you have the golden chance to take them as your parents. I can tell you, he is a father beyond measure. Look at the words, nourishes and cherishes. He's not only giving impartially, okay, like those people who distribute food in the orphanages. He cherishes them, loves them, and watches over his children. It knows God as the divine mother who holds us in her bosom, lavishes upon us the sweetness of her love, and fills the universe with her forms of beauty. It's really what a poverty that humanity is deprived of this relation with God. So she, it's not just cherishing and nourishing. She holds to the bosom. She must fill the world of her child with beauty. She doesn't want to give suffering, pain. People say, mother, why has mother put me through it? No, excuse me, mother doesn't put you through it. The problem is you have never really with complete faith given yourself completely to the divine. You have always held back, you have doubted, you have done this, that, and suddenly one day pop, oh, I am going through difficulties, mother has put me through this. If you really learn to surrender, so she says, lavishes upon us the sweetness. We'll never feel any pain, never feel any lack of love. It knows him as the first creator from whom has originated all that originates and creates in space and time and relations. So etada yoni, it is the eternal womb of all things. So what comes from that? We are all connected with each other so beautifully. When mother was asked, how can humanity become one? She says, by becoming conscious of its origin. And that's why religions have to go, because religions have divided. My God, my Guru, my Master, my origin. It has cut the one in pieces. Believers, non-believers, all kinds of things. But divine cannot say like that. There is a nice Meera Bhajan. So where she says, Raja Ruthe Nagri Rakhe, Hari Rutha Kaha Jaso. Eri mein to Govind ke gungaso. So people ask him, why are you like a mad woman always thinking of Lord, Krishna, Krishna? He says, see, I'm very practical. You people don't understand. If the king is unhappy, the city will keep me. If not this city, some city, somebody will hide me and keep me. But if the divine is not pleased with me, where will I go? And of course, that mother says, divine never is never displeased. He always, you cannot go out of the circle and circumference of God. So here is this. It knows him as the master and ordainer of all universal and of every individual dispensation. So he is the one from whom dharma has emerged. That's why all dharma ceases when you are face to face with the divine. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. When Duman Bhai, Rabindraji, so he was a pure vegetarian. Mother gave him the work of giving eggs. Now, touching egg for a pure vegetarian is like, you know, blasphemy. What to do? So people say when first he used to give egg, it was as if he's touching something very bad, horrible. Like, you know, quickly he'll give it. But what was mother saying? When the divine commands, that's what the Gita says. Kill those who are in front of you, even though they be dear to you. When the divine commands, no other dharma applies. That's why the mother says, one who has turned to the divine has no other duty towards anyone except the divine. And the divine takes care of all else. That's the other part. And he has his own way. That comes later. Yoga Shem Bahamyam. The world and fate and uncertain eventuality cannot terrify. The aspect of suffering and evil cannot bewilder the man who has surrendered himself to the eternal. God to the soul that sees is the path, and God is the goal of a journey. A path in which there is no self-losing, and a goal to which his wisely guided steps are surely arriving at every moment. Why there is no loss? Even if everything is lost, you belong to God and begin to grow into his Godhead, into his nature. So there is no loss of self. In fact, that's how mother says, my child, true surrender does not diminish you, it aggrandizes. See, use the word aggrandizes your personality, which sounds very strange. Because it releases all the godlike elements in it, takes it to its zenith level. So though you are losing apparently your little self, you are gaining nothing less but God himself. God is few lines below. He knows the Godhead as the master of his and all being, the upholder of his nature, the husband of the nature soul. This is what is the story of Radha and Krishna, Savitri and Satyavan. That's why even in ancient Christianity, in monastery, the nuns were supposed to be married to Christ. Similarly, with all the those who turn to the divine, the gop, gopi, they are married to Krishna. That's how we have the 16,000 wives of Krishna. Once someone had asked me that, Krishna had 16,000 wives. I said, sadly, I wish the whole world was his wife. Me included. Because the soul is always in the feminine, out of the mystic even in man's heart. The heavenly psyche must put off her veil and step into common nature's crowded rooms. Poor, only 16,000. Bad luck for those who didn't wed. So here it is, husband. Look at the power. The husband of the nature soul, its lover and cherisher, the inner witness of all his thoughts and actions. God is his house and country. Just imagine. Do you belong to Ashram? Do you belong to Auroville? Do you belong? I belong to Mother. And we can say with all this conviction, yes, you have to choose a place which you are destined to be for whatever reason. But you live in Mother. Just imagine what a power it would be. One lives in Mother. Wherever one goes, one is living in Mother. So God is his house and country, the refuge of his seekings and desires, the wise and close and benignant friend of all beings. This is a very practical advice I have given to so many people. People say, I don't have somebody to whom I can share my feelings. I said, you are lucky. But you can share it with God. How? Write in a diary. Right? Will God listen? I say, you see the magic. Start writing. And when you are through a crisis, start with that. I have done it so often with all kinds of things. If you have a illness which you think is intractable, start writing. If you are going through a psychological turmoil, write to God. He will listen. He's the wise one. And he will not give you counsel. He carries us. He knows that if I give him counsel, he doesn't listen to even his psychiatrist counsel, me though he doesn't even have a belief in. So he will carry us. So this is where A few lines below, death is his mask and immortality is his self-revelation. So will there be any fear of death? No. It's a mask. If death comes, we'll tell him, please, this doesn't befit you. Oh Lord, come, I'm ready to go, but come with a nice, luminous, your form, at least. Okay. And then there is that, well, this is the description of the Godhead and the relation. So, but then with bhakti and surrender, we have so many ideas. So who is the God to whom we surrender? How to make the surrender? Human mind is very complicated. What should we give to God? Should we give this thing, that thing? And whom to the deities? What shall we ask God? All these questions come spontaneously. To all of them, Sri Krishna is replying. Nothing but the highest knowledge and adoration, no other way than an entire self-giving and surrender to this highest, who is all, will bring us to the highest. So the highest conception of the divine, he is everywhere, in everything, in each atom of existence, in each morsel of food that I eat, in each sip of water that we drink, in each of the manifold relations. It's nothing else but the divine. In each event and circumstance of our life, if you read Sri Aurobindo's early writing, early means for a long time this was a book which was distributed and one of the most fascinating books, powerful books. It's Yoga and Its Objects. The Yoga and Its Objects. Now it is part of collected works of Sri Aurobindo, either volume 12 or 13. The whole thing is there, The Yoga and Its Objects, written in 1913, before the Arya. And it's a very interesting story where mother would read it with Amrita. And Amrita would be, he would say, we didn't know. So we were sitting next to her. She's also sitting as if, you know, we are colleagues. But that is her greatness. And there Sri Aurobindo starts with the beginning of the yoga is the sankalp of Atma Samarpan. That I give myself to the divine. That's how when today someone asked a question, what if Satyavan refused to come back, you know, human mind, and what did Satyavan do? I said, Arey, he did the most heroic act. He gave himself completely to the Divine Mother in Savitri and said, you carry me. He gave without doubt, with full faith. And that was it. And Savitri accepted. After that, he doesn't know. During death and everything, she carries through the journey. So, he says that when we give ourselves completely to the highest, then we come to the highest. So whenever we see God in a limited way, limiting way, for instance, mother of Sri Aurobindo ashram. Yes, but she is a divine consciousness force. That's what Sri Aurobindo has himself written. We can see even the highest in a very limited way. So that's what Sri Krishna is revealing. And a few lines below this, of course, we'll be taking up on Friday. Outward religion is the worship of an outward deity and the pursuit of an external beatitude. Its devotees purify their conduct from sin and attain to an active ethical righteousness in order to satisfy the fixed law, the shastra, the external dispensation. They perform the ceremonial symbol of the outer communion. So this is one thing we all know. They go to the temple and do all kinds of ceremonies, rituals, and they ask for things like progeny and wife, husband, God knows what all, food, shelter, money, all things people ask. But their object is to secure after the mortal pleasure and pain of earthly life. And if not earthly life, the bliss of heavenly worlds, a greater happiness than earth can give, but still a personal and mundane enjoyment. Though in a larger world than the field of this limited and suffering terrestrial nature, this is the ordinary religion. That you can blow yourself up, and when you go to heaven, you will get the best wine in the universe, and you will get whatever else unspeakable. They will come and satisfy your pleasure. And they are, even the word stupid seems very dignified for people who believe in this and actually do it. But there are people who want, are you don't know, here you are losing, God knows what kind of pleasure, but this is what people are seeking, individual pleasure. Even there are, in every culture there is, but only thing is Hinduism has gone beyond it. So it says you can go there. The Gita says, yes, there is a possibility you can go to heaven. But the problem of such a heaven is that, but their object is to secure after the mortal pleasure, but still a personal, though in a larger world. Then he says, and to that to which they aspire, they attain by faith and right endeavor. Not that you blow yourself and go. But then he says something very interesting. Few lines below. Other worlds there are of a larger felicity. Swargalokam, Vishalam. Thus the Vedic ritualist of old learned the exoteric sense of the triple Veda, purified himself from sin, drank the wine of communion with the gods, and sought by sacrifice and good deeds the rewards of heaven. The firm belief in a beyond and the seeking of a diviner world secures to the soul in its passing the strength to attain to the joys of heaven on which its faith and seeking were centered. But, now comes the but the return to mortal existence imposes itself because the true aim of that existence has not been found and realized. You may go to Swargalok or any Vaikunthalok, any higher lok, or whatever, Jannat or heaven, where you have mortal pleasure. But to an nth degree. Shubhendu describes it in Savitri under the book 2, canto 9, Paradise of the Life Gods. So you go there, but you will come back. Because you are still seeking after mortal pleasure and at the same time at an immortal level degree, and at the same time you have not arrived at the highest consummation. So after some time, somebody will come there and tell, sir, your time is up. This is going to be a double torture because you were used to earth. Now you are used to heaven. Now you are being thrown out unceremoniously because your time is up. Go back. Where? Back to earth. But why? I did all the pujas. Yes, but you didn't arrive at the highest. So that's what he is reminding us. Here, so what is that consummation? The ultimate thing we are here to learn. Here, and not elsewhere, the highest Godhead has to be found. So first thing is on earth, not somewhere else. Because even heavens, these are typal worlds. You have to find him here. But something more, here, and not elsewhere, the highest Godhead has to be found. The soul's divine nature developed out of the imperfect physical human nature. And through unity with God and man and universe, the whole large truth of being discovered and lived and made visibly wonderful, that completes the long cycle of our becoming. Finding God here, transmuting our nature into a divine nature, leading here a divine existence and a divine life upon earth. This is the great consummation for which we fellows came here. Not to go back, though that possibility is there. He is not denying. Krishna is not denying. See the difference. A religion may stop here. Shri Krishna says, yes, there is something like that. But this is not the ultimate because you will be thrown out. One day you will be thrown out. The God lover advances constantly toward this ultimate necessity of our birth in cosmos through a concentrated love and adoration by which he makes the supreme and universal divine the whole object of his living. Not either egoistic terrestrial satisfaction or the celestial worlds and the whole object of his thought and his seeing. That's why 1929 conversations, the first conversation of the mother. Will you tell us something about yoga? She says, first thing is, why do you want to do yoga? To gain power, to gain knowledge, to become a yogi, superman. None of this shows that you are ready to help humanity. None of this shows you are ready for the path. This starting point of Sri Aurobindo's yoga is, she says, you have to answer this one question. is the divine the raison d'etre of your existence? To live for the divine, for the sake of the divine, for the joy of the divine. Then one is this is the royal gate of this yoga. So it starts with that. To see nothing but the divine, to be at every moment in union with him, to love him in all creatures, that's how the yoga and its object starts. What is Atma Samarpan? Next passage Sri Aurobindo describes. Please read this amazing, you know, it's like the Gita in a very short, this thing. That you have to see the divine everywhere in everything, in every event and circumstances, even if you cry tears of blood. That's how he puts it. Then this passage, then you are ready for that great vision. To see nothing but the divine, to be at every moment in union with him, to love him in all creatures and have the delight of him in all things is the whole condition of his spiritual existence. This is spirituality. Not like magical powers, doing magical things and all kinds of, you know, meditation techniques. His God vision does not divorce him from life. Nor does he miss anything of the fullness of life. How he is enriching life. Nothing is lost. That's why we see in Savitri at the end in book 12. She says, heaven's touch fulfills, but cancels not our earths. We are still to each other in the last. That I am still the same to you, you are still the same. But heaven has enriched, not diminished this love. So that's how he reveals. God, for God himself becomes the spontaneous bringer to him of every good and of all his inner and outer getting and having. Yoga shema vahamyaham. LIC has taken up this statement of Sri Krishna. She's actually wrong. Sri Krishna says in a context. The contest is if you give yourself wholeheartedly to God, without conditions, without demands. The only demand or condition is I want to be near you, I want to be yours. Take me completely. That's the only condition. Then God himself will take upon himself all that you need, much more than what we need, he will provide. Never will he suffer from any. I have seen such amazing stories, real stories in life. I know one story, since we are in the reading of the Gita, personally known a patient, a girl who suffered from schizophrenia at a young age. And then, you know, the father, only daughter, and father from middle or maybe even the lower middle. And he would say, what shall I do? Should I get her married? I say, it's a very dangerous, I mean, because who will marry? And if you say the truth and if you don't say the truth, it will be revealed all kinds of problems. And then, what his wife, she was a bit cranky, but complete trust. So one day, she had some problem. They were all in old age, entering into. So suddenly the wife says, in front of Krishna, see, I have treated you like a brother. You are the mama of my daughter. You better see to it that she gets married to a proper boy. I don't know anything. Don't ask me. I am not going to question. Now it's your responsibility. You are her mama, maternal uncle. Real story. I have seen it, not just narrated. Narrated, of course. Within 15 days, a boy walks in, literally. They are married happily for the last some 7, 8 years or 10 years. They have a child. The girl is on treatment. The boy accepted. Yes, she should take medicine. I don't know what happened to his buddhi. But a nice boy, of course, I shouldn't say what happened to his mind. Normal human being will not accept. And their life is like blessed by the Lord. Completely. See, she told, one day, sitting in front one day, she says, I am not going to, everybody tells me this, that, I am fed up of this. You are a maternal uncle, you take care. I don't care now. How you will do it? And see, with that faith, so yog shem vahameham, he takes care of all your getting and having. The joy of heaven and the joy of earth are only a small shadow of his possessions. Once you get that nectar, Then if you are told, would you come to heaven of Indra, you will only ask, will I see mother every day? No. That's Indra is the Lord. Hell with it. Don't want that. And if someone says, will you be ready to go to hell for the work? Mother will be there. No? Yes, she is working there. Ah, come. This is the joy of the God lover. And then he describes that, you know, there are the ordinary religion, they sacrifice to the Pitars, the forefathers, to the gods, and for limited objects, and therefore they remain limited. Though the divine ultimately accepts, even if you, that's how the mother says at one place, if you worship Shiva, you worship me, if you worship Durga, you worship me, and all you get from them comes from me. This is exactly what Sri Krishna reveals. So here he says, if they do, page 332, few lines below, if they do with faith, then their faith is justified, for the divine accepts whatever symbol, form or conception of himself is present to the mind of the worshipper. Yam yam tanum shraddha archati. It doesn't matter, you offer to Shiva, you offer to a stone saying that you are God, you offer to a tree. Yesterday was what, Savitri Puja, no? People, they are going around the tree doing that. I said, it doesn't matter. They are seeing God in the tree. What's your problem? They'll get a response. Not the tree, but the divine who is indwelling in all. What they are asking, according to that. That's how the response comes. If you do it with faith, that's the only condition. So, all sincere religious belief and practice is really a seeking after the one supreme and universal Godhead. So here there is also this thing that, well, Sri Krishna says, whatever people believe in, I strengthen their faith in that deity. Not like I destroy their faith. I kill their faith. I convert their faith. That is the task of the asura. The divine strength, okay, you believe in whatever form you believe. Doesn't matter. You want a limited thing, that choice is there. However small or low the form of the worship, however limited the idea of the Godhead, however restricted the giving, the faith, the effort to get behind the veil of one's own ego worship and limitation by material nature, it yet forms a thread of connection between the soul of man and the all soul, and there is a response. If you go to Ujjain, there is a temple. Not the Mahakal temple, there is another temple dedicated to Bhairav. Bhairav is a form of Shiva, but you know, in the nether worlds. And you know, there is a particular deity where they offer alcohol. And alcohol after offering is given as a prasad. You will see snakes dancing out there, you know, all the... Well, these people who come, they don't know, you know, they just understand this. It's enough that there is a greater reality behind this material universe. So the divine accepts it. So this is how the story goes. Still the response, the fruit of the adoration and offering is according to the knowledge, the faith and the work, and cannot exceed their limitation. So this is where it's important to understand that we may worship the mother and Shurbindo also as limited deities for limited fruits. We may form a religious contact with them. They will not say no. But that's not how the highest consummation will come. So this is what we need to remember. Page 333. This absolute self-giving, this one-minded surrender is the devotion which the Gita makes the crown of its synthesis. Crown. So this is the ultimate and one-minded. Not like little bit here, little bit there, little bit please this God, that Guru, maybe who knows, who will come handy, who will book your seat to heaven, we don't know. Who will grant you moksha? It doesn't work like that. When you give completely. There's a very beautiful story of Tulsidas. He is a bhakta of Rama, and you know, Sanatan Dharma, all are one, we believe it. So he says that you are worshipping Rama, but there is a very nice Krishna temple. So he goes to Krishna temple. He is enjoying the sight. Krishna is like that. So he says, but why aren't you bowing down? He says, see, that part is a different part. So he says, why? He says, bhale birajo, you know, that you are looking very beautiful. I don't deny, O Lord, in this form of Krishna. But if you want me to bow down, please take the bow and arrow in your hands. Kaha kahu chavi aapki bhale birajo nath. Tulsi mastak tab nave dhanush vaan loha. This my way. You wear that form and come. I know you are the same. But I go through this form. Show me. So here it reconciles sectarian, you know, fidelity to the path and sectarianism. So there is a way through which you are going, and that you see everywhere. But with complete faith, you don't need to go anywhere. So often people say, but we are wide, what difference does it make if we call this or that guru? I said, it's not about calling this or that guru. It implies that you don't have enough faith that the mother can give you all that you need. By its nature, it implies. You may not admit to yourself, it's a different thing. If you really have complete faith in her, then you won't need to go anywhere. The story of a Sufi mystic where one of his disciples has reached very high, so much so that he is likely to become the next successor. And his guru tells him, take this little letter and give it to the other. There is a guru nearby, you give it to him. So he goes and gives to this other master, who opens the letter and he says, ah, your master has written so highly of you. But I see that there is something missing in you. I'll complete it. Come, embrace me, and I am going to give you that last little thing. And the moment he says, this great would-be master steps back. He says, no. If my master has not given me this, he knows why he has withheld it. I have surrendered myself to his will, and if he has to give it, if I have to receive it, I'll receive it through him. That great master is regarded as Baba Farid, you know, in spiritual literature. That he said, he refused. He said, I won't accept even the highest from anywhere else. This is called complete faith, total dedication, devotion. That's what is called one-minded pursuit. That's why it is a secret, so difficult for human mind. It flip-flops. Maybe one Yogi Raj is coming. Who knows? Let me try my luck. You will only keep changing compartments in a train which never moves. Sit in one place, this train will carry you where it has to. So he says, all action and effort are by this devotion turned into an offering to the Supreme and Universal God. It's the devotion in the heart. It's not like you have to keep remembering, I am giving this action, I am drinking. It's not a mental activity. You are full of that love. So whatever you are doing becomes an offering. There is a state. Whatever thou doest, whatever thou enjoyest, whatever thou sacrificest, whatever thou givest, whatever energy of tapasya of the soul's will or effort thou puttest forth, make it an offering unto me. So it becomes an act of love. Here the least, the slightest circumstance of life, the most insignificant gift out of oneself or what one has, the smallest action assumes a divine significance and it becomes an acceptable offering to the Godhead, who makes it a means for his position of the soul and life of the God-lover. You see, so many people, mother has signed herself their money orders. We surprised. 50 paise, one anna, she will sign the money order herself and send it. Because she knew that this is like a blessing. And the person is waiting. And there is this man who heard stories of the mother because some disciples were talking. He looked like a very, you know, very low income person. He took out at the end when they were getting down in Chennai and he was also getting down. He said, I have never met your mother. I don't think I'll ever see her. But I have heard and I feel so happy. Please take this 1 rupee from my side and give it to your mother. So they come and give it to our mother, the divine mother. So mother held in her hand, she went into trance. And then she says, the divine will find it difficult to repay to this person. This is how, it's not like how much money somebody has given, he gets a VIP ticket. Special darshan, deluxe darshan, special laddu. For the ordinary commoner, there is another similar kind of laddu. This is where we have to, this is the true authentic yoga. For by an absolute self-giving, all egoistic desire disappears from the heart, and there is a perfect union between the divine and the individual soul through an inner renunciation of its separate living. So what happens? You start with this desire given to God. You're going through that desire but offering it. After some time, the common, that desires are changing, but the divine is one. So, mother, you take this, mother, you take this, mother, this is yours, though you are using it, mother, this. After some time, mother, 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 that's the whole process of yoga. And what a divine he is describing. Who is this divine? Next page, 5-6 lines below. The divine eternal is the inhabitant of all existences. He is equal in all and the equal friend, father, mother, creator, lover, supporter of all creatures. Only thing is that we don't receive because we close the doors. He is equal. He is the enemy of none and he is the partial lover of none. Everybody loves with as completeness. That's why when we read the stories, it's so strange. We make a distinction between this sadhak and that sadhak. Ask the people. They feel that the mother has been as completely to us. I remember meeting one of the, well, I can mention, Hutadi. So, she said, you don't know how mother had been like this to me, like that to me. So, two of us were there, we said, Hutadi, excuse me, she is still the same. And we, no, she, you don't know how special she was. I said, actually, we feel the same way that she was very special to us. She is very special to us. Then she started, you know, expanding. I said, exactly, this is how all of us feel. Not only me, everybody who has turned to her feels this way. That is the mother. Nobody is very special to her in that sense. But everybody feels that she is so special to me. That's the story of all the gopis dancing with Krishna. I said, she is not, she gives completely. How much you will receive, it's up to you. How much you will benefit by her giving is a different thing. God may walk into your room and you may end up asking a penny. Or God may walk into your room and you may say, I want nothing, I just want to accompany you wherever you are going, come take me. That's the difference. But he gives himself equally. He is the enemy of none and he is the partial lover of none. None has he cast out. None has he eternally condemned. None has he favored by any despotism of arbitrary caprice. All at last equally come to him through their circlings in the ignorance. But it is only this perfect adoration that can make this indwelling of God in man and man in God a conscious thing and an engrossing and perfect union. So from his side, everybody he gives himself. But the perfect adoration if you have, then only you take the... That's how you can encash the opportunity given to us. Love of the highest and a total self-surrender are the straight and swift way to this divine oneness. Let's see. So categorical. Love of the highest and a total self-surrender are the straight and swift way to this divine oneness. See, this is what Sri Aurobindo is writing all through. Sometimes I wonder what are the methods people are teaching all over. In the name of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And then they go to, you know, living in the presence and, you know, moment or all kinds of things. So people ask me what I said, please read Sri Aurobindo and the mother. They have shown us a much simpler, direct, straight, swift path. Of course, they don't deny if you want to go through circling and meanderings, it's okay. You can come down straight in the Savitri Bhavan all step by step, or you can go through each of the stairs and come. Well, choice. Or you may just enter and turn away. To each his own choice. But this is the path. Easiest path. Few lines below. All have access to this gate. All can enter. Into this temple, our mundane distinctions disappear in the mansion of the All-Lover. There the virtuous man is not preferred, nor the sinner shut out from the presence. Together by this road, the Brahmin pure of life and exact in observance of the law, and the outcast born from a womb of sin and sorrow and rejected of men, can travel and find an equal and open access to the supreme liberation and the highest dwelling in the eternal. Man and woman find their equal right before God. These, all these questions people raise is all answered. For the divine spirit is no respecter of persons or of social distinctions and restrictions. All can go straight to him without intermediary or shackling condition. No middlemen, priest or intermediary gurus needed. If, says the divine teacher, even a man of very evil conduct turns to me with his soul and entire love, he must be regarded as a saint, for the settled will of Endeavour in him is a right and complete will. Swiftly he becomes a soul of righteousness and obtains eternal peace. So this is the I learnt it in a very strange way, because you know, you come from a certain background and still those remnants of virtuous stick to you. And as I had come, not yet become an ashram inmate, and suddenly one man walked in drunk, and you know, he was cursing swear words at someone. I got bit annoyed. I said, "You can't do it here. Get out from here." So he said, "Why? Who are you to throw?" I said, "No, no, you can say whatever, but this is not the space for this." So he got very annoyed. He was from Haryana. He said, "I'll see you. Come out." And he started chasing me. I also got into that ego trip. "I am from Air Force. I'll see you." So then he started catching me here, there, my cycle. And he would try to, and I would also give a defiant look. Let's see who makes the first move. So it went on for 3-4 years till we both got used to it. Then one day I am sitting inside the ashram and I see this man walk inside, and he is looking at the samadhi. He was actually very unfortunate. He was not allowed for some time inside. So, but he would fight and come. That's how I heard. So he was looking intently, and my heart was overcome with a deep emotion. I said, "He has turned to mother. Who am I? What am I doing? I ever judged him. How stupid, foolish, all this blessed." Then next day, he came, strangely. And I said, "I wanted to meet you." He said, "Yes." He said, "I also wanted to meet you." I said, "Actually, you know what? I have developed a strange love for you." He said, "Same here. I have no more enmity. We are friends." I said, "Wonderful. I'm wondering why." So he said, "No, you tell me, how come?" So I said, "You know what?" And he was even then on a high, probably not alcohol but something else. So I told him, "You see, I saw you in the ashram and I described," I said, "he has love for mother and that says it everything. Doesn't matter, rest doesn't matter." And then his answer baffled me. He says, "Who else is there to love?" And this man, trust me, was a profligate. But here is a man who is sleeping around with all kinds. Suddenly he says, "Who else is there to love?" I realized that, you know, my heart changed, his heart changed. After that, everything was so beautiful. And it was so strange that during his last moment, I was there to certify his. So how the divine works? He teaches us. This is not to say this is a road to yoga. There are people in the ashram who will tell you. One of them, Dada's, Pranab Dada's brother, he says, "You people don't know what mother is. He has also made her very strict and all. No, no, she is very full of love." I said, "Why?" He said, "You know what? Sometimes I would drink alcohol. She would give me the money and tell me, 'Don't drink outside, come home and give.' So that you don't create a nuisance." Now, it's not that mother is justifying alcohol, but she accepts all who turn to her with love and takes each one along their own way. And it's not our business to judge or condemn. This is not to say that integral yoga's royal rod is through the Tevan. But as men approach him in whatsoever faith, so he receives them. This is the whole thing. And next page, 335, that the will of self-giving forces away by its power the veil between God and man. It annuls every error and annihilates every obstacle. All the theory of karma goes out of the window. He annuls every error and annihilates every obstacle. Those who aspire in their human strength by effort of knowledge or effort of virtue or effort of laborious self-discipline, with which we started, grow with much anxious difficulty toward the eternal. This is the baby monkey attitude. I am doing meditation so much. I am wearing only white dress. I am eating only vegan. I am, you know, I. So basically at the end of the word, I. I am doing effort. Now he says that those who do this grow with much anxious difficulty toward the eternal. But when the soul gives up its ego and its works to the divine, God himself comes to us and takes up our burden. So then if you say, I know nothing, I can do nothing, I am nothing. Then he says, okay, wait, I come and take you. So at the end, if you ask such a person what sadhana you have done, he says, I don't know. I don't know what is yoga, I don't know what is sadhana. That's how Shubhendu says. I don't know what is bhakti. I don't know what I am not a jnani. I am not a yogi. I am not a bhakta. Who am I then? I am a leaf driven by the breath of the God. And then toward the end, he says, to the ignorant, he brings the light of the divine knowledge. To the feeble, the power of the divine will. To the sinner, the liberation of the divine purity. To the suffering, the infinite spiritual joy and ananda. Their weakness and the stumblings of their human strength make no difference. This is my word of promise, cries the voice of the Godhead to Arjuna, that he who loves me shall not perish. So beautiful it is. And then he says, there are people who prepare themselves, but even without this preparation, all who take refuge in the divine lover of man, how is describing the master of man and his infinite lover is close to our hearts, had we vision to see. We are lost in the pride and the pomp of our passions. We are bound by our thoughts where we hold ourselves free. He says, all who take refuge in the divine lover of man, the Vaishya, once preoccupied with the narrowness of wealth getting and the labor of production, the Shudra, hampered by a thousand hard restrictions, woman shut in and stunted in her growth by the narrow circle society has drawn around her, self-expansion, those two, Papa Yonaha, on whom their past karma has imposed even the very worst of births, the outcast, the pariha, the chandal, find at once the gates of God opening before them. What else can be said? Last line, there is very powerful on page 336. The way to liberation is to turn from the outward to the inward, from the appearance created by the material life, which lays its burden on the mind and imprisons it in the grooves of the life and the body, to the divine reality, which waits to manifest itself through the freedom of the spirit. Love of the world, the mask, must change into the love of God, the truth. Last line is, this is the Gita's teaching of divine love and devotion, in which knowledge works and the heart's longing become one in a supreme unification, a merging of all their divergences, an intertwining of all their threads, a high fusion, a wide identifying movement. Chema.